Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good tired Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen from across the hall in Ocala, Florida. And you are listening to the Horses in the Morning show on the Horse Radio Network for August 8th, 2012, episode 462. Today's title sponsor is Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar.
If that is your national anthem, and we're going to talk a lot about that as we get through this first half hour of today's show. But first, I just wanted to tell you that Jamie's off today. She'll be back Friday just in time for Really Bad Ads. I think she's doing something out there in Phoenix today, or either she's sleeping in because, oh, my God, Jennifer, this Olympics has to get over. I swear the productivity at workplaces across the world has diminished the last 2 weeks. You stay up late watching sports you never even heard of before and you've never watched before, and you act like you're interested, and matter of fact, you are, and that's why you got to stay up. You start watching the weird sports like indoor bike racing where they just sort of stare at each other for two laps and then ride like bats out of hell to try and win the thing. And then, yeah. You know, you got it, and then you watch it, and it's like watching a train wreck. You got to keep watching it and see who wins the gold, even though you'll never watch it again and you don't care who these people are.
You know something? When you said that about the bike racing, we were watching this bike racing the other night. Is it – what's the name of the venue, the Melodrome?
The Velodrome, something
call it?
Like that. Some kind of drome.
The something drome.
Yeah, it's a thing with the odd roof.
But what they've done is they've taken the excitement – bicycle racing, and they've crossed it with the mental acuity and boringness of chess, and they've created this bike race.
No. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. Literally, for the first two laps, they went as slow as they could staring at each other, and then the third lap, they rode like crazy. It was like, why don't they come out riding like crazy? I didn't get it. That was one of the most unusual ones I've seen. I don't know. Jennifer, are you still there? Okay, I don't know if I'm still on the air, but I'll keep talking because I'm not sure what's going on here this morning. But anyway, I also last night had a great time watching Kerry Walsh Jennings and Misty May Trainer as they beat the Chinese in an exciting beach volleyball match. You know, now that Jamie's not here, I can talk a little bit about beach volleyball for all the horse husbands out there. I swear this has to be the highest rated sport out there because every guy in the world is watching beach volleyball. But these two are terrific. They're great for the sport. They're so much fun to watch. They're so enthusiastic. If you see them after every match, they're running around. They're giving high fives to everybody in the whole audience, it seems like. And they're yelling at the camera, and they're just having a good time. Well, the Chinese gave them a run for their money in the first set last night, just gave them a run for their money. But I'll tell you what, they came back, and they won the thing in two sets. And it was an exciting match, and I just had a blast watching the beach volleyball. They're going to be playing today for the gold medal again, the third one.
Okay.
They're going to be playing April Ross and Jennifer Kessie, who are also from the United States. So we have an all-United States final in the beach volleyball tonight. I just had a blast. You even enjoyed beach volleyball last night.
I did. I have to admit it. It was fun. Those girls are wicked fit, let me tell you.
Said that sand was deeper than they're used to and the sand they usually play in. So can you imagine? It's hard enough just the sand to get to the water, you know, when it's really deep like that, let alone playing volleyball for an hour or 2 hours in it.
Yeah.
It was
crazy.
It was fun stuff. It was really good. I enjoyed that. I've been enjoying a lot of the different sports. But you know what? We're all staying up extremely late. I swear that more five-hour energy drinks are being sold this week than have been sold ever in history just from cubicle workers trying to stay awake about 2 o'clock in the afternoon after watching Olympics till midnight or 1. I swear.
A lot of five-hour energies being consumed?
We should have owned stock in that company because everything that happens in the world that requires you to stay up late, they sell more five-hour energy drinks. It's a perfect business. You can't.
Yeah, it is.
It's perfect business. Anyway, what's coming up on today's show? We have lots of guests and lots of things going on.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, we've got Olympic results, Olympic hopes, and Olympic what the heck, as we just noted. And a few wacky horse rescue headlines to fill in the gaps. Team Fleeceworks Grand Prix show jumper Joey Gatlin stops by with another tutelage for the Olympic equestrian discipline with the most confusing qualifying process that would be show jumping. And being Wednesday and all, thehorse.com is here. Michelle and Dr. Jones will be providing a soft tissue injury recovery primer. And for all of you avid gardeners out there, it's National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day.
Is that really a day, or is it just a zucchini day?
It was on the internet, so it's real.
How many of us that had gardens? Jennifer and I, the first farm we had, right after we met, we did the same mistake that every newlywed couple, and everybody out there is going to be relating to this that has a farm. Every newlywed couple goes, oh, it's our first year of marriage. We have this big farm. We might as well plant about an acre garden. Everybody makes that mistake when they first start out if you have a little land and a little ambition. And by halfway through the gardening season, you are so sick of pulling weeds. You are so sick of that garden that you just say, oh, heck with the weeds. And you're also sick of having about 12,000 zucchinis that you don't know what to do with.
Yeah. One zucchini plant. Nets you 0 zucchinis. 3 zucchini plants nets you 1 ton of zucchinis.
And that and cucumbers. And I love cucumbers, but how many cucumbers can you eat? And you always plant about 50 cucumber plants figuring, oh, you know, you only get a couple cucumbers per plant because, you know, what did we know? We were new in our 20s, in our early 20s, and, you know, gardened, and my mom had gardened, and I think your mom had gardened, and we were like, wow, we're going to do that. And then you have all you have no place to put the cucumbers. You get sick of cucumbers and tomatoes. And then years later, now here we are, don't have any garden, and we're just hoping to find a half decent cucumber and tomato in the grocery store. Completely
the
opposite. Yeah.
The entire state of Florida lacks one decent tomato. We've got a busy show coming up. So let's get on to the Daily Winnies.
Well, let's talk about Really Bad Ads first. It's going to be back this week on Friday. Jamie will be here. Really Bad Ads will be back. We haven't had it in a couple of weeks, so get your ads in. We'll have a really cool prize for you. We'll announce that tomorrow. So get your really bad ads in this week, and we'll look forward to hearing them on Friday. So
where do they get them into, Glenn?
To Jennifer with two N's, Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put really bad ads in the subject line. Well, my daily Winnie goes out to Hope Hudson. You might ask who Hope Hudson is. She's the 12-year-old Missouri girl that we talked about during the Triple Crown races this year. If you remember right, she had a Make-A-Wish Foundation wish to go to the Kentucky Derby. Well, she went to the Kentucky Derby, and she met this little trainer guy named Doug O'Neill. And they hung out together. Doug O'Neill became infatuated with her. And if you remember right, Doug O'Neill was I'll Have Another's trainer. Well, what happened after that was Doug O'Neill loved this girl so much that he actually had her brought out to both of the other races. So she got to attend all three races. Well, today she's undergoing surgery, a major surgery in St. Louis. She suffers from an extremely rare connective tissue disorder. I'm not even going to try and say the name of it, but it affects the bones and growth for which there is no cure. She weighs 60 pounds and has undergone 9 previous surgeries. So let's keep her in your prayers. And she's a sweet little girl that Doug O'Neill is actually has plans and scheduled a flight to go out and visit her. Good for him. And let's wish our best and all our hopes and prayers from the Horse Radio Network go out to Hope Hudson and her surgery today.
And my first of two daily winnies goes out to the entire country of Great Britain with a gold in team dressage, a gold in team jumping, and a silver in team eventing. Nothing like hogging all the team medals, dudes.
Yeah, they are very happy campers over there in England right now. Very happy.
I have another one. Hit the button. I have another one. There we go. And my second daily Winnie goes out to the velvet voice of Victoria Spicer. That's right. Our Horse and Country TV gal is at this very moment sitting joyfully in Greenwich Stadium watching the Olympic show jumping and not calling into Horses in the Morning. Thank you very much.
What is wrong with her? Where is her dedication? We're going to have to speak with her next week about that. What the heck? Well, they're on a little bit of a break now. She could have called in because they're on a little bit of a break right now from the first round. But we'll get into that in a minute with our first guest. But, you know, we can't get off of dressage here for a minute. Yesterday, you know, with the British winning the gold, they were the first ones to win, except for the Germans, in 40 years in team dressage gold. 40 years the Germans have owned that title. And it was the first Olympic dressage medal of any color for Britain, team, or individual. So congratulations to them. The results for dressage came down Great Britain, Germany, Netherlands, Denmark, Sweden, and United States in sixth. Poor Canada is not having such a good Olympics. It seems like the whole world is against them at this point. We're going to talk a little bit about dressage and hear from Rudel's Roundup here in a little bit from Horse and Country TV and the excitement they had over there in Great Britain. But we have our first guest on. Let's go back to jumping for a minute. We have Jody on with us, who was on with us on Monday. She's a Team Police Works rider, and she is a show jumper. And we want to talk to her about the jumping and how exciting that was. Also, you know, for that little country over there called Great Britain. Good morning, Jody.
Good
or
morning.
Joy,
how
sorry.
Are you? It's all right. Joey, it's all pretty close.
Joey, gotcha. Sorry, Joey. That was my fault.
No,
I'm trying
no
to read
problem.
50 things at once here. So tell me what excitement we are having over there right now. We just got done with the individual first round, and we're going to go for the winner here in about an hour. But the team competition was just as thrilling.
Oh, my gosh, it was a great competition. The British were just on. Their horses jumped fabulous. And, of course, those guys rode great, headed by Nick Skelton and You know, it was just a super exciting competition. And, you know, the Dutch are always strong, and they gave them a good run for their money. And the Saudi team had positioned themselves well with acquiring some really very lovely horses and working quite hard over the past few years. So it was a great team competition.
Was there any one or two individuals that really stuck out for you this time and horses?
For me, Nick and his horse, they just look like they are peaking and jumping the jumps easily. Nick is at the top of his game. I pick him as the individual gold. And I think that any of the other, you know, individuals from the Netherlands could be right there. All those horses jumped very, very sharp. You know, a lot can happen in two rounds today. So, it will be a very exciting competition.
Well, what I was saying earlier about the Olympics being very distracting and causing all of us not to get our work done, I was trying to prepare for the show this morning and watch the individual jumping as it went off this morning. Now, they've named 22 riders that will go on to the final round to go for the individual gold medal. One of, and you're right, Nick Skelton, let's talk a little bit about him. He's riding a horse by the name of Big Star, and it's a big horse, too, and just a lovely horse. But Nick himself has quite a story. Here's a guy who broke his back not too long ago, was in bed for months. He has more parts that have been replaced in his body than you know, in most of the Terminator movies. He's just an incredible bionic guy at this point.
Well, and you know, he loves the sport, he loves to ride, and that's what keeps bringing you back. You know, quite a few of us have had injuries over the years, and, you know, sometimes you can soften up and decide, I don't want to get right back up at the top level of the sport. But those that have the passion for it, they just, you know, let their bodies heal and get right back up on those horses and go for it again. He has great sponsors in the Whittesons that own his lovely horse, and you know, I think he's been developing that horse over the past couple of years. This year in Florida, he won 9 of the 12 Grand Prix, and I think that put a lot of great miles on that horse and some great experience in a stadium-like situation down there in Wellington. And they're just a great match, and that's one of the keys in show jumping, is that the horse and rider get along well and that they're a good match. And that's what you're seeing with Nick and his horse. They're just really peaking together.
Well, the British actually have three in the final, in the finals today. They have three riders. They have Scott Brash, and they also have Ben Murr. So we only have one. The United States managed to squeak in a horse we talked about on Monday, Rich Fellers and Flexible.
Rich is, like I said on Monday, he's my hero. He's a West Coast rider, and I've watched he and Flexible over the years compete, and so exciting when he won the World Cup Finals this year. And that horse is a small little stallion. You would watch it walk, trot, canter around the warm-up ring and go, really? It's going to jump meter 60? And it just goes out there and bounces around like a little rubber ball, and Rich has that horse dialed in. He knows him like the back of his hand. And they just, you know, hopefully they'll have a little better luck here in the second round and move up there. I would love to see Rich be able to catch a medal.
It's been kind of a tough, we talked about the Canadians having so much bad luck with equestrian over the, you know, over these competitions. And but the United States, we haven't fared a whole lot better. We've had a tough time here too.
Yes, it was unfortunate a little bit at the beginning, you know, with Beezy and Diavolo. You know, the mare looked like maybe she was a little fresh and upset in the ring the first day, because that's not usually, you know, their trademark is to be steady Eddie and always clean or four. So that was a little bit unsettling, I think, the very first day for them to have an elimination. And, you know, a McLean's horse, he's a great horse, but he's not Sapphire, unfortunately. And he just looks like he looks like he got a little strong on McLean there. And, you know, Rich and Flexible gave it their best. And our young rider, Reed Kessler, she deserved to be there. And she qualified and did beautifully in all of the trials that were put in front of her. And it's, you know, when you get up to this level here at the Olympics, it's a lot of it is being able to calm the nerves and having that experience behind you. And she did a great job. I thought she kept herself composed and tried her best, and her horse tried its best. And, you know, we just didn't quite have as good a year as in the past, but, you know, we can take that and build on it.
How much do you think, Ed, personally, do you think, they talk about this, I don't know what coverage you're watching, whether you're watching it online or on the TV with the NBC coverage on TV, but, you know, one of the things they've been talking about is how well the British are doing. They're standing third right now in the total medal count, and they're just having an exceptional year. How much of that does come from it being on your home turf, do you believe?
Oh, I think a lot comes from being on your home turf. And for the jumping and the horses and all of that, the dressage, eventing, show jumping, they're a real horsey country. So I think, you know, you get that little bit extra excitement and, you know, maybe even a little extra confidence because you have all your countrymen pulling for you there. But I think it really helps. Like, you know, you're comfortable, you're in your own country, your own weather, your own everything. And, you know, you get a little extra confidence from that, I think.
I do too. And of course, you know, there's a couple people that we probably should mention that'll be going into the finals today that we can't rule out. Rodrigo Pessoa is one that we obviously can't rule out. Now, there is one Canadian that did make it, and that's Ian Miller, who on Star Power, who did make it into the final round today as well. So there's any one of these riders at this level could take the gold today. There's no question about that. And of course, you know, this was as I understand it, this morning's round. Now that didn't take into consideration any of the scores from before. This was brand new. Now when they go into the final elimination round here, the final round, will it take this morning's round into consideration, or is it just the next round period? Jump off winner.
I believe that the top 22 from the first round this morning get to come back. And then if there's any tied with the same amount of faults, then you're going to have a jump off for your medals.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yes, it could get exciting if we get some tied scores.
All right, terrific. And that's going to start at 10:55 Eastern, about half an hour from now. So we'll be lucky here, Joey, if we have any listeners left at all on the show this morning, as they're all off watching.
They're probably like me, sitting in front of the computer watching.
Yes, and you're getting up early to do that. You're dedicated. So, well, now, is it, what do you have going on? Do you have any horses up and coming that you have high hopes for? What about you personally? Are you going to be in the next Olympics? Are we going to be talking to you from South America?
I would love that. You know, it's all about timing, and right now I have a nice 8-year-old that's developing, so in 4 years she'll be 12, which would be the great age for an Olympic horse. So, you know, you always have that in the back of your mind. And you just never know if something's going to come along that will get you there. You always keep all your options open. We have a lovely training business that we have going right now in San Juan Capistrano in Orange County, and that's keeping us pretty busy at the moment. I have a couple of 6-year-olds coming along. So, you know, lots of things happening. And, you know, I think every top rider's dream to hopefully get that special horse to go to the Olympics. So I'm available and developing the horses and hoping that it will happen.
And, of course, we did mention that you are a Team Fleeceworks rider, and we wanted to thank Fleeceworks for putting this interview together. But now that Jamie is not here this morning, I can go back to a conversation we had on Monday, and now that we're kind of done talking about jumping and we're going to see who wins today, let's go back to the conversation we had on Monday about the Three Amigos. So, yeah, let's catch everybody up that wasn't here on Monday. Joey's dad, your dad, worked on movies as a stunt coordinator, correct?
That's correct. He started in the business, and he did a lot of movies, and I remember as a kid it was always a lot of fun to go on the locations, and he did a lot of stuff. He worked on over 12 John Wayne movies. He's worked with Sidney Poitier and Sylvester Stallone and Kevin Costner, and I mean the list is awesome. It's a very, very cool thing.
Yeah, it must have been kind of neat that he would come home and talk about his work day when you were a kid, and you're hearing all these people that you see on the movies all the time.
Oh, I know. It would be like pulling teeth sometimes, though, to getting to tell us, like, who's on the movie. I'm like, Dad, who's working on that one? Oh, I don't know. And then I'll find out a little later. It's like Sylvester Stallone or Kevin Costner. I'm like, Dad, these are, like, famous people. And my dad, he's kind of a country man. And, you know, just people were just nice people to him. And, you know, when I would find out who they were as a kid, I'd be like, oh, excited, and be like, oh my God, look who he's working with now, you know, and teaching Billy Crystal how to ride. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm teaching this nice gentleman who's going to do this movie how to ride. I'm like, who is it? I don't know, Billy something. I'm like, oh, Billy Crystal, come on.
Now,
funny.
One of them that we joked about the other day, because Jamie was picking on me because I picked out The Three Amigos, one of the best movies of all time, I think it's a guy thing. So you had Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Martin Short. Did you get to meet any of them?
Yes, you do. You know, there's some time during the shoots and stuff like that you get to meet them. And, you know, it's amazing to meet them. They're all very, very nice. You know, they're working stuff like that, so you don't get to sit around and, like, chit-chat a whole lot. But you go up and you meet them, you introduce yourself, shake their hand, and they're very, very nice, fun people.
Yeah, I got to imagine that making that movie, you got those three making a movie. It must have been tough for the director, one, to wrangle them in, and to ever get the movie done.
Well, you know, that's part of making movies. You hope you don't get behind schedule. You know, they're all on tight schedules, and you hope that there's not too many flub-ups, you know, as they say. They can get a little carried away sometimes playing around and joking around, that's for sure.
Now, did your dad and you, were you involved in all the horse stunts, or was it other stunts as well, or was it all equine-related?
Well, in that particular movie, in Three Amigos, it was my dad pretty much was in charge of all of the action stuff, all of the horse stuff, all of the coordinating the people and everything when they start blowing up the town, you know, remember that part?
When,
you know, that's they have to coordinate all of that. They have to coordinate where the people run and when the explosions go off and when the horses gallop through. And so that's all part of the stunt coordinating. So you kind of get it set up. You do a walkthrough, and then you go live. And, you know, as soon as they go action, you've got to be running to a certain point. And then when that explosion goes off, you need to go and run to a different point. And then when that explosion goes off, you better be clear from that area and on to your next point. So it's a lot that goes into it, a lot of coordinating, because you have to be very careful when you're working with, like, the horses and the explosives and stuff like that everybody's at the right place at the right time.
And you can't redo those, can you? I mean, those scenes are one take and done deal?
They try to be, yes. You know, it does happen occasionally. They have to retake, and it just, you know, it takes probably a day to get everything set back up that they've blown up. They have to rebuild, you know. So that's when the directors start getting a little tense, when you have to redo a big scene like that.
Well, Joey, give out your website address for us.
Well, you can catch us just at joeygatlin.com. That takes you right to our website, and we have some beautiful pictures up and all of our information. And we also have a nice spot on there about Fleece Works and the wonderful pads that Judy McSwain makes. And I just think they're one of the best products out there on the market, and I thank her for putting me together with you guys.
Well, this has been fun. We so appreciate you coming on and doing the coverage for us. You know, after this weekend, I guess we can all go back to getting to bed and actually getting some sleep at night.
Yeah, well, we're at a horror show, so we get to keep getting up early the rest of the week.
Okay. Well, you have fun out there. Good luck. Thank you so much, Joey, for getting up early and joining us, and thanks to Fleeceworks for helping put this together.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we appreciate that, and we're going to be talking about dressage here for a couple of minutes. Of course, we had that happen yesterday, and I think, Jennifer, doesn't the Grand Prix Freestyle happens tomorrow on the 9th, right?
Tomorrow, Thursday, I believe that's right, yes.
Yes, I'm not sure about the time. You'll have to check that. And you do have the chat room open as well?
I do.
So the chat room is open. You can find that by going to Blog Talk Radio, and then on the homepage there, scroll around and find Horses in the Morning, and you can click on that to find our chat room and join in with the other listeners this morning. Now, Jennifer, there were a couple of things that happened yesterday. Obviously, one was the big news that the British won the team dressage, and we're going to have a little bit of a sound clip for you from a Rudolph's Roundup, which is our friends at Horse and Country TV, who are usually here on Wednesdays to join us. But as you said, she's watching the show jumping in the stadium there, so can't be with us. So I wanted to just share a bit of the excitement that that they had on the show last night. And this is Horse and Country TV, horseandcountry.tv, rather. And you can hear the rest of this just by going to their website. But I just wanted to share some of the excitement she had last night with her guests on the show about the dressage.
Welcome to Rudolph's Roundup. Well, I have to say I'm incredibly pleased to say that Team GB have won another gold. The dressage has delivered. I'm joined on my couch by the brilliant Andrew Gould.
Hiya.
Thank you very much for coming, Andrew. Got a little clap for Andrew. Dressage rider Anna Ross Davis. And Jill Walker, owner of Southern Cross Stud. So, Jill, guys, thank you very much. And Kitchen Cam, again, we've got lots of people in there, very delighted. Well, I'm going to go over to Andrew. It's a great day to be British, isn't it?
It's absolutely amazing. It's been, for us sitting down, actually, towards the end, we started to breathe and relax and gain confidence a little bit. But the whole week, you know, with the show jumpers yesterday and the dressage today, it's been quite an emotional couple of days.
And we were saying that we felt like welling up. You guys were in the ground. Adam, what was it like?
Well, the excitement was just building and building, really. Obviously, Carl got us off to a great start.
Mm.
But I think we were all very aware that the Germans were really only a fraction behind us after the team test. So it really wasn't any kind of a done deal. Obviously, Carl gave us a fantastic advantage. And then, yeah, the pressure was just building and building and building. Everyone was doing their maths in the stand. It was all pretty exciting.
And Joe, looking up there, Great Britain at the top. Did you ever think you'd see that day?
No, and I mean, with a really strong German team as well, it's just fantastic to be there. It's, yeah, wonderful.
And I think we should look at Carl, because like you said, he was the first one in. That horse actually seemed, he seemed to let the brakes off.
I think he really went for it, and he went out really hard. With the first extension, you knew straight away that it was, he was going more than he did last time. And there's such a good score to start with. I think that gave everyone a little bit of confidence, and it put the Germans a bit under pressure, which is good for us. But he looked much more secure in everything, and I think, like me watching it personally, I started to relax and I started to trust a little bit, because first day I think watching it was a little bit edgy.
Yeah.
So I do think that confidence started to build, and I think that built throughout the whole of the team.
And Annie, you can see we've got Utopias just come up on the screen here. Is he as amazing when you watched it today as it came across on screen?
Yeah, he is amazing. His trot extensions are just incredible.
Mm.
And that test has a lot of trot extensions in it. So if there were certain parts where the marks came down a little bit, he came down a little bit on his walk, off he'd go again into an extension, the crowd would all sort of breathe another another sigh of relief. And it was very exciting. He's fantastic. He's very fluid.
Yeah, and the stars were particularly strong.
Yeah,
really
strong.
And he did struggle a little bit, though, coming from the walk into the Piaf.
He wasn't as comfortable.
Mm.
And you could see the difference between the second Piaf and the first one. The first one coming from walk is always difficult. And actually, quite a few horses made that transition look a bit more difficult.
And, again, you guys were down there. Jill, how hard was it to contain? When you see the scores going up on the board, you've got to try and stay quiet.
I think everybody around us was just holding their breath. And the whole, every time the British riders came on, everybody was just, you could have heard a pin drop, really, until the end of the test. And the only little murmurs you heard were when some of the really big scores were coming up, like Utopia's trot extensions, and you were seeing 9s and 10s coming up, and there was a little gasp as the scores were sort of flashing up.
Wow, that was from Rudolph's Roundup on horseandcountry.tv. You can hear the rest of that just by going to their website and checking out Rudolph's Roundup. And there was something else happened, by the way, they were talking about Carl Hester and his horse, Horsetopia, on the show there. So that's the Carl that they were talking about, of course. And they had a newspaper article on the Daily Express. Now, there's a lot talked about with the British tabloids. And I don't know whether the Daily Express is actually considered one of the British tabloids. But, Jennifer, did you see the newspaper that was posted all over Facebook now? And I posted it on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, where they posted the pictures of the gold medal winners from Great Britain. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't. Tell me.
Well, it's the Daily Express. It's the front page of the paper, and they have happy and glorious 22-karat gold, and they're showing pictures of the winners from Great Britain, and they have the dressage team.
Well, they have a dressage. Wait a minute. I just looked it up.
Yeah, that's not the dressage team from Great Britain. That is actually the bronze medal winning Netherlands team that the newspaper had pictured. And from one of our friends on Facebook, Nikki posted, there is an uproar about that in our country. Our first dressage gold just shows you how little the press knows about UK equestrian sport.
Is he colorblind? I mean, it's not like the Netherlands is one of those subtle teams. Every outfit they have is day glow orange.
The collars are orange. They're wearing their bronze medals. They don't even look gold. And here we are. We have the other gold medalists. You know, we have the cycling girl and the triathlon guy. And, you know, and then we have the Netherlands bronze medal winning team. I wonder if that guy got fired, the guy who did the homepage there.
Oh, I got it. Yeah. That'll be a collectible issue there, right there. That'll be a collectible issue.
That's he should have been. Well, we're going to be back in just a minute with Shauna Koresh. Jennifer had a chance to catch up with her about training babies, right?
You betcha.
All right, we'll be back with that right after a word from our title sponsor today, the wonderful Back on Track product.
Well, we are here with Bo from Back on Track Products, and we're going to highlight today the saddle pad. Tell us about the saddle pad.
The saddle pad is starting to get more and more popular. People, some have bought them, buying more. They really like them, and Michelle Gibson is one of them. Some is a top dressage rider, and it's good quality. And what they do, the same there, they reflect the body warmth back like a far infrared rear. It's not, they don't overheat the horse or anything. They just keep them more supple and loose. Mm-hmm. And it's a good quality and affordable. They're $79, and it's like a good quality saddle pad.
That's very affordable for a saddle pad that's going to increase the blood flow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Are they the type of saddle pad that they can be used both in practice and show?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So absolutely. They're show quality.
Absolutely. So they look like a normal saddle pad. You can't see the difference, but it really makes a difference. I don't ride myself, but everybody tells me. And since the increase of saddle pad have been very good, it's actually that product that increased most in our sales. So it means we get a lot of repeat customers. So that means.
Is it a square pad or is it the shape of the saddle?
It's a square pad. So, you know, we have all-purpose and dressage, and we're going to get one. Goes around
shaped
the
one.
Shaped one
yeah.
too. Yes.
Shaped ones as well. Well, that's great. And $79.95, and they are machine washable?
Yes.
You know, for what it does, that's a terrific price, because we have seen some saddle pads here that don't do anything but be a saddle pad for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is actually $79.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, it's pretty, and it's a good quality to hold up, you know, like a regular saddle pad of good quality. Yes.
Make your horses happy. Go to backontrackproducts.com and get the saddle pad. It'll definitely improve their attitude.
Well, thank you to Back on Track Products for their continued support of the Horse Radio Network, and specifically Horses in the Morning. We appreciate that. BackOnTrackProducts.com. Well, Jennifer, why don't you introduce the next segment?
Well, Shauna Koresh stopped by the other night to give us a little chat, because she is off on many, many clinics this time of year. She's going to New Mexico, and then she's off to Southern Pines, so she's a very busy gal. So we caught up the other night and recorded our monthly Shauna Koresh get-together, and we chatted a little bit about training babies. And it's that time of year. The youngsters from 2012 are going to be weaned right around August, September, October. So we thought this was timely. And Shauna Koresh is here once again on Target Training Lady, the person who helps me get past the bucket trucks in the neighborhood safely on board my horse. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I think we're going to continue on the young horse theme and talk about teaching, what to teach a young horse to get him started for a lifetime of learning.
Cool. Don't teach him to rear.
No, that's
okay.
Not good.
Okay, what should we be teaching the young horse? I mean, he's not going to be going riding. He's not going to be getting lunged. What in the world should we be teaching them?
You know, and there is 8 million things to teach a baby. And
I don't have that big a piece of paper.
Yeah. I saw this really long number, and I was like, what even is that number? It has so many zeros, but it was a septillion, which is not quite a gazillion, I guess. But anyway, so there are just so many things that are foundational learning tools that will help them down the road, and the stronger they are, the better they'll be for a lot of things. Now, like I said, these things will serve a practical purpose, but it'll also teach them, you know, a lifetime of learning and relationships and wanting to be engaged in things and looking forward to their time with humans. And so, and we're talking about using the positive reinforcement, and it makes it one, so they're very interested in you and what you want to do or what you're looking for them to do. And their little minds are just so, you know, so eager and curious that it really kind of works to your advantage. But one of the things I think is one of the fundamental tools that you really should always start with is being able to handle them all over their body. So where you can touch every little inch of them and have them be nice and relaxed. So it's not just touching them with their head up going, what are you doing? But you want them just to stand quietly, head dropped. I don't care if you're touching my belly, my sheath, my legs, my ears, whatever it is, my mouth. And those are all good things to get them really solid about so you can touch them anywhere. And that, I mean, you think about it, that's going to go a long way towards, you know, saddling, mounting, worming, veterinary stuff. So it kind of sets them up for a whole lot of things, and the farrier as well. So handling their feet, that's another really good thing to do, is getting them used to picking their feet up and having them nice and relaxed. Pulling kind of mimic what the farrier would do. If they pull their foot out and put it on the stand, you know, have them let them do that and pull their foot back. That's another really good tool. And I guess one of the fundamental things, too, that I really tend to start with the little guys is teaching them to lead. So I like to, you know, when you put on a halter and lead rope on a baby, I mean, what is the first thing they do? They have a tendency to rear, you know. They pull, they resist, it startles them, they don't know what to do. So I use the target and teach them, so the target becomes like the new halter and lead rope. So instead of having pressure, you're teaching them to lead by following. So you're teaching them to lead through positive reinforcement as opposed to pressure.
Frankly, a much more natural way for a horse to go anywhere.
Yes, it is. And what they start getting, so at first I use the target because it makes it very clear what I'm looking for, and it helps set them up for success because I do teach them the bridge and the target first. So the clicker and then the target. And then you can go where you turn right and the target kind of goes to the right. So they learn that, and they're watching your body at the time. So they pretty much start learning, oh, when she goes that way, the target goes that way, I go that way. You turn to the left, you walk faster, you trot, you stop, you back up. And then you start fading the target out. And what they pretty much learn to do is heel like a dog. It is so, so simple. Like I had a little guy and I had him for a couple weeks, and I took him down to a clinic in a foreign place and took him off of the trailer with no halter and lead rope in a place he'd never been, and he just stuck right with me, like, okay, this is what we do, you know, and so you can totally get that. And then I will put in the halter and lead rope, and instead of letting it turn into something that they fear or resist, I put the halter and lead rope on, and then I just have the target go. And then what I do is I give a little tug so they feel a little pressure, but then put the target. So they feel the pressure, but then it's the target is presented. So they do the right thing. So you start teaching them how to respond to the pressure, but it is not taught through pressure. Does that make sense?
They're not responding to the pressure because they discover it releases when they move. They move to the pressure because they've got a secondary cue. In other words, I feel pressure, and then immediately after that I saw my target.
Yes. So the pressure is more of a signal, as opposed to a training tool, you know, because traditionally we apply pressure until they give, then we soften. We apply pressure until they give, then we soften. So as opposed to it being the training tool, we're just conditioning as a signal. This little tug means let's go forward. So because I want all my horses, as much as I do at Liberty and Loose and Making Choices, but I want them to be able to be handled and ridden by everybody and to know traditional signals. But I want to teach them as a signal as opposed through the pressure and release. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So
okay, good.
For somebody who struggles doing this just because I have very poor timing, my horse knows it better than I do. He trains me. He says, click the thingy, honey. Click the thingy now. In the case of teaching them to lead, they understand the target. They've got that down pat. We have a halter on. We have a lead rope on. But we're not using any pressure on the lead rope to tell the horse to do anything. It's just hanging there.
Yes.
So we
go ahead.
So we will create slight tension on that lead rope and thus on the halter and thus on the horse's head. And we do that for a very, very short period of time, like a couple of seconds, and then present the target. Is that how that would work?
Exactly. So it's just a little, and it's soft. You know, it doesn't have to be the softer we teach it, the softer it can always be. You know, if we give a big giant tug, you
that's
know,
asking
it's
for
always,
mischief on a youngster, isn't it?
It is. And then we also, it is asking for trouble. And then we're also saying this is the criteria. But if we teach really soft and they respond really soft, we'll get soft through everything, and everybody wants a soft horse.
Right.
And I ideally will start not even with the halter and lead rope, but at Liberty first, if I will. If your circumstances allow that, you know, sometimes people, it doesn't work that way, but if you're in a place where you can take them and just teach them to follow and walk with you all by themselves, that will make it, even in their stall, if they're, you can put them in a stall, that will help make the lesson clearer. Then here comes this new element of this thing on your head, and, okay, just ignore it. We're just going to follow the target, and then you start applying the pressure. So it helps them to always look at it not as a fearful thing or a scary thing, but they know exactly what to do.
Uh-huh. So I get my halter on. I'm going to be doing some training because I know I'm going to feel some pressure there, and as soon as I do, I'm going to do something, and then I'm going to get – and they're going to have that same – they're going to associate it with a learning procedure versus – oh, gee, what scary is going to happen this time?
Yeah, and it's something that they start understanding. I look forward to this. I like to do this. People bring fun stuff. So it is good.
This begs the question.
Go ahead. I'm talking all over you today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, lots of folks like to teach youngsters silly little behaviors or encourage silly little behaviors. Can you give me an example of tricks or behaviors that have gone bad and then people and horse pay for it dearly later on when they're youngsters?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that people let happen. Like they let them nose them or push them or lean on them or come up to them and rest their head really heavy on them. And all that can be fine if you initiate it. I mean, I like to hold my horse's head as much as anybody, and I want them to lean on my chest, but I don't want them just doing that at any moment in time, you know, because next thing you know, they're just running around butting you, you know?
Yeah.
And so you try to, if you can think about what is happening at this cute little adorable stage, well, if it is now a 1,200-pound stallion, would you still like it? You know, if you can think of it like that or doing it to other people that don't know, would that seem appropriate? But there's just so many things that people do, you know, or they teach them to shake, and then pretty soon the horse is just pawing and pawing. So there's a lot of things I kind of want people to stay away from, but it depends on the personality. But just like I said, if you can think of anything that you wouldn't want a big adult horse doing on their own without you initiating, then don't go there. And like you said, rearing is one that people think that's cute. And you're like, no, I never. I haven't taught any of my horses to rear. It would be simple. I could do it in a day. But it's like I don't really want them offering that behavior for me. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and some people
do. Leave that to the movie star horses.
Yeah, or at least leave it down the road, you know, where you've taught some other things first and you go, okay, now there's this. But, as much as you can teach them sensible stuff. And another thing, too, like you can every little component of what you're doing you can be teaching. Like the putting the halter on, you can teach them to put their nose to poke their nose into the note through the halter, you know, mm-hmm. and that you can reinforce them for that. Well, that kind of thing, so you bring the halter, you present it, they put their head in, you can hook it. And this kind of thing also helps them when it comes time for bridling. So then you present the bridle, you have the bit, if you're a bit person, you have the bit to kind of contend with, but they understand the presentation and that something's going to happen here. So there's so much you can teach them. You can teach them to soak their foot in a bucket. You can teach them for the farrier. You can teach
I like that soak their foot in a bucket thing.
Yes. And it's
that's
so
good.
I mean, why wait until they're injured and you know, they have an abscess the size of, you know, a grapefruit. And
yeah.
you're going, no, I need you to soak, and they don't get it. So teach it, you know, now where it's no big deal. And that also tends to carry over to dealing with water and dealing with puddles, you know, so it helps them to go, well, that's not that big of a deal. Or there's, you can even put, this is one of the things I would do, is I would get a surcingle, a little tiny surcingle, and I would teach them to have like a saddle pad, just a little light English saddle pad with a surcingle on them. And
that was something we did with our weanlings. All of our weanlings had to wear an elastic surcingle and a saddle pad to and from the field every day.
And see, and that is perfect because you're just preparing them for blankets and for saddling and for so many things that it is. And it's simple, you know, and when they're young and you're just setting it up and you can take your time. I mean, there's you could just go on it. You could teach them to load in a trailer. You could teach them to be clipped. You could teach them, get them, prepare them for shots and what that will be like when the vet comes or every time the vet comes. He just comes in and doesn't do anything, but you're both standing there and touching him. You know, that goes a long way. So there's just anything you can really think of that you would do as an adult horse, you can actually start teaching to a young horse, you know. So even though you may not use it for a long time, you're setting them up so that they do know how to do it. And again, you're circumventing those issues later when you've covered it first in your own due time and you got to slowly process it. Mm-hmm. And it will just help his demeanor about everything. It's amazing how receptive they are to learning after that.
Wow. That right there was 12 minutes of intensive youngster learning right there.
Good.
That was great, though. There's all kinds of stuff. It never occurred to me. Just like, really? Feet and water buckets? Awesome idea. Clipping? Great idea there. That's just great stuff. And start them early. Get a whole bunch of skill sets under their wing. And by the time they are 3 years old, they're going to be three-quarters of the way broke mentally.
Yeah.
They're just going to be little learning sponges.
Yeah, and it makes them so sensible. You know, it's a horse that grows up nice and sensible about things, and that's always a pleasure.
Who doesn't want a sensible horse?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Well, thank you very much once again, Shauna Koresh, from
it's
On
a,
Target
a pleasure.
Training. It was a pleasure. That was great. Thanks a bunch. See you next time.
Okay, bye.
Well, that's Shauna Koresh from On Target Training. And Jennifer, what's her website address?
The easiest place to find Shauna Koresh is if go to Facebook and put in there Shauna Koresh, K-A-R-R-A-S-C-H, and she's right there on Facebook. Or you can go to On Target Training. It's three separate words with a dash in between each.
All right, terrific. On Target Training, you can find Shauna Koresh and all of her training tips. Did you know that Wendy was up yesterday? She's the co-host of the driving radio show. Matter of fact, we played a driving radio show here on the morning show yesterday. And she was up yesterday. We spent a day with her, had a lot of fun. But did she tell you she's going to Shauna's clinic up there in Southern Pines?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's going to go to Shauna's clinic when she's in Southern Pines when Shauna's there. So she's going to she loves the clicker training and everything about it. So she's going to head up there and visit with Shauna.
That's so awesome.
Yep. Well, now we're going to for our sponsor, EQ Ready Records, and then we're going to play a little song by Jason that's very appropriate for the British right now, and that's a song called Guardian Angel. And we're going to be back with thehorse.com talking about soft tissue injuries. All of that coming right up here at Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Coach Jen, and we are without Jamie today. She'll be back on Friday. Don't forget to get your really bad ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com today or tomorrow. Get on Craigslist, get those ads in, and we'll look forward to reading them all out to you on Friday.
Coach Jen here with Amanda Eckelberg of EQ Ready Records, Equine Records Management Service. Amanda, EQ Ready Records is really a fantastic service now that I've learned about it. and it's getting a lot of us horse folks organized. What made you start EQ Ready Records? It's such a unique concept.
Well, that's pretty simple, really. I've worked in and around the horse business for the last 15 years in various aspects, in the breeding barn, in the vet's office, at the training barn, at the ranch, and everywhere I've gone, it always amazes me. Nobody is available to take good care of their records, which is so important. They spend a lot of money getting double vaccinations. They get coggins pulled 2 and 3 times a year because they can't ever find them. Those kinds of things, and it made me wonder, wow, you know, these people really need help. They don't want to, nobody wants to do the paperwork. Nobody wants to sit behind the desk and enter things in the computer, but when you need it, you need it. For example, a couple of years ago here in Texas, we had, you know, a flu rhino outbreak. Everybody was calling the vet clinic, is my horse vaccinated for this? Is my horse vaccinated for this? How simple would it have been for them to just get on the computer, log in, and see exactly what their horse has been vaccinated for and when? Or if they needed to do any other preventative maintenance, they could do it at that time. So I came up with this concept for we can do it effectively, cost-effectively, and accurately, and all of your information is secure. It's available when you need it, where you need it, and you don't have to worry. That's just one less thing you have to worry about.
So you're taking the, oh, expletive out of those situations by being our record keepers for us.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm glad you started it because it's a fantastic service. Folks out there listening, you need to go to eqreadyrecords.com, so easy to spell, and check this out. You'll be glad you did, and folks who take care of your horses for you when you're away will be glad, and your vet's office will be glad, too, because they're sick of you calling. We'll see you again soon, Amanda.
All right, thank you.
She could have passed for a cowboy the way she carried herself, and that 50 pounds of leather put it up on that pony. Light as a feather, like she'd done it all her life. And she asked if I was ready, handing me the reins. And we started out walking. Up until that morning, she hadn't been much on talking. Guess it finally come the time, and she said, I've learned more from the back of a horse than most folks ever get to know. You never really know what you're made of till you ride out on your own. Ooh, baby, don't worry, I know you're gonna be just fine. And ooh, now don't be in a hurry, you feel it when you hit your stride. So don't get mad, sit deep in the sand, remember to hold on tight, and never ride faster than your guardian angel can fly. I remember what she told me, clear as a bell, as it was on that morning. It was kind of like a blessing and a warning. Her car heads out of the driveway. She'll have had enough of doing things my way. It'll be her turn to fly, and I'll say, I've learned more from the back of a horse than most folks ever get to know. You never really know what you're made of till you ride out on your own. Remember to hold on tight.
Well, that's Templeton Thompson and Guardian Angel. You can find all of her music by going to templetonthompson.com or just looking up Templeton on iTunes. You can buy it there. One of my favorite songs, of course, I have a lot of favorite songs with Templeton, but you can, as I said, you can find them all at templetonthompson.com. This show today is brought to you by backpro.com. Well, we're waiting for Dr. Jones to join us this morning with thehorse.com. I'll chat with Michelle in the meantime. Good morning, Michelle.
Hey, Glenn. How are you doing?
Okay, of course, Michelle Anderson of thehorse.com joins us every Wednesday for the weekly horse health report. But we're waiting for Dr. Jones to come on here. I thought I'd find out from you, have you been watching the Olympics nonstop? Are you like the rest of us and just not getting anything else done?
I've been super, super busy traveling for thehorse.com, so I keep missing it. I watched a little bit of gymnastics last night before I went to bed, but I'm working on getting on East Coast time zone right now. So I'm missing it, but I have gotten online and watched a couple of the dressage tests, a little bit of the jumping, but not as much as I'd like.
You guys
Sorry.
Have been also covering it a bit on thehorse.com, I've seen.
Yeah, we have Jennifer Bryant is over there, and she is doing some great horse health-related coverage on thehorse.com, and then she's doing her blog, which is a behind-the-scenes. So a lot of fun. She drew the long straw on that and got to go for it.
Yeah, I'd say.
But we were talking yesterday about WIG 2014 being in Normandy, and I think we might have to arm wrestle for that one.
You're signing up for that particular one?
We're going to fight for it.
You know, this story that doesn't seem to want to go away is the Canadians about the horse that was eliminated because it didn't pass the one vet check. And, boy, they're not letting that one go, are they?
Yeah, well, it's not any fun to get all the way over there and get eliminated. But, yeah, we'll be following that for you guys. What about the horse with the one eye, the Hanoverian Stallion? Who is blind in one eye that competed in the dressage. I think that's a really neat story that we have up also.
That just goes to show, you know, there, we've had some horses in the past that have had moon blindness and things, and it just does go to show you that they can function, you know, with one eye or, you know, with limited vision. They can get around.
Yeah, he lost his eye in a stable accident, but he's there doing the Grand Prix, which I think is really amazing to have a horse that's one of his main senses is impaired, and he's there in front of that huge crowd on that huge Olympic stage and competing at that level. I know I can barely get around a second-level test, so I'm really impressed. And my horse has both of his eyes.
All right, please tell me we're not talking about eyes being ripped out of heads at this point during the show.
We are not. We are not. Good. We are not.
Good. Glad to hear that. Let's play this.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
That's right. I know conveniently that Jamie is out today on Gory Gross Wednesday. I've renamed it now to Gory Gross Wednesday. It's time for the weekly horse health report with Michelle Anderson of thehorse.com and also Dr. Jones at Florida Equine. Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Good morning, Glenn. So Gory Gross Wednesday is what you're calling us now.
Just a segment. The segment of Wednesday is now Gory Gross Wednesday. But I'm
we aren't going to be gross at all today. We aren't going to be gross at all today.
Just, no, it's kind of just, kind of light on me today. I appreciate that. Now, Dr. Jones,
yes,
Michelle said she's been busy. Have the Olympics hindered your practicing medicine in the last week and a half?
No, it's practicing medicine has hindered me viewing the Olympics.
You have your priorities wrong, Dr. Jones. You just have wrong.
I know. I need to be sitting at home and watching the Olympics. We try to watch it on my iPhone, and that's pretty pathetic, I'll tell you that.
Keeps cutting in and out. And the dressage test gets very jaggedy when the signal comes in and out. It looks like the horses aren't doing very well at all. Yeah, no rhythm.
They look like little robots.
Yeah. Yeah, true. All right, Michelle, thank you.
Yeah, well, and I'm just going to throw in, while I've been missing the Olympics and I'm not keeping up on all of that, I have to say I just got back from UC Davis at the vet's school there doing some awesome videos for thehorse.com, and I'm here this week at the University of Kentucky at the Gluck Center also doing some more videos and content. So some good stuff to look for. So I'm working.
Thus, wait a minute.
I'm
that
working.
Means more Gory Gross Wednesday coming up.
There will be more gross stuff. I cannot wait to show you the video of the trach that we did. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'll just sign up for that tomorrow.
So, but today we're taking it easy on you. We're talking about rehabbing your horses from soft tissue injuries. And we had last month on thehorse.com, we did a live event on stall rest and rehab with Dr. Jackman, who's been on the show with us before, and then also Dr. Brad Bentz. And they had some great, great information about keeping your horse happy and safe and sane while they're in stall rest. But stall rest, lots of times, not always, comes from these soft tissue injuries. So, Dr. Jones, can you explain to us what we mean when we say a soft tissue injury? Because it's kind of this blanket statement. My horse has a soft tissue injury. What does that mean?
How about easiest is anything but bone. But it could be an attachment to the bone, too, because all soft tissues somehow make their way around attaching to the bone, such as a joint capsule will attach to one side of the bone on one side of the joint and the other side, and that's a soft tissue structure. Tendons, ligaments, muscles, they all have some sort of coordination or input into the skeletal system, but it's anything but the skeleton is the best way to describe it. And I do want to add, too, to the audience today that stall rest is not truly locked up in the stall in a soft tissue injury situation most times. There are a couple occasions where they are locked up, but that is so old-fashioned to lock a horse up without hand walking or some sort of controlled exercise or movement that we don't do that anymore, but they do spend more time in the stall than they do out. So I'm sure the suggestions last night were fantastic for keeping their brains moving and active, because that's not normal for a horse.
Yeah, how to keep them happy when they aren't getting to get out and do their regular routine of being ridden and playing out in the pasture. But so you mentioned tendons and ligaments. Can you tell us the difference between a tendon and a ligament? Because I know this gets really confusing sometimes for people.
Yeah. Well, the tendons are usually the extension of a muscle. I guess would be the easiest way to describe those. So the most common one that we think of in the human world is the Achilles tendon. So it comes down from your calf muscle, comes back around your heel, attaches down onto your feet. And the same thing with the horse, they have an Achilles tendon that comes down the backside of their leg and attaches down down by their foot. So that's the easiest way. Then the ligament will go between the bone and the tendon. And, again, joint capsules or other soft tissue structures that are in, you know, bone to bone around the joint to keep it secure and healthy and sanitary, too, I guess is a better way of describing that.
So in our horses, what are the most common soft tissue injuries that we deal with or that you see in your practice?
The ones that most everybody are aware of are the tendon ones with the fibrofibular digital flexor tendon and the deep digital flexor tendon that are on the backside of the front limbs and the hind limbs. Suspensory ligament is another structure that's on the backside of the legs, and that's another structure that can be injured. But those are the most common ones that we as veterinarians and sports medicine see. There are other soft tissue structures that can get injured, but they're on the lower scale. They may start eking up to a higher scale because we now have better diagnostics to diagnose them with, such as better ultrasounds and MRIs.
So, so if your horse has a soft tissue injury, what does that look like? How do I know that might be going on that I need to call my vet?
Initially, just like with you and I, it'd be heat and swelling, and then the pain, of course. So they'll limp right off the bat. Then after a while, they stop limping. But they limp right off the bat, they'll have heat, and they'll have swelling in that area. And those are the most common initial signs. If you're riding your horse one day a week on the weekend, trail riding, and they're just hanging out in the pasture, you may miss the signs. And by the time you see the horse, they may just have a lump or a mass that actually painful to touch or you'll have to kind of a judgment at that point is how old wound, is it really old or is it something that recently happened that you just might have missed the first 48 hours worth of pain and heat.
Yeah. So ideally, if you notice this, is it something to get your vet involved in right away, or is it a, I'll give it a week and see what my horse looks like?
I think the soft tissue injuries need to be addressed right away, in my opinion. And it's not that it's life or death threatening. I think it's athletic threatening. Now, granted, if you have a 28-year-old that's pasture ornament, that's out in your pasture, that's maybe company for the rest of your horses, or it's your only horse you have, you probably don't have an athletic career with that horse that might be out there in retirement. So for them, it may not be as pertinent to get the vet out right away, but you'll have to understand that a 20-something-year-old horse is going to repair itself as well as a younger horse that bounces back after injuries. So I think that they need to be seen right away because they can have some mineralization in the soft tissue as they're healing, which is going to cause more damage down the line. So I feel it's something that needs to be seen, but it's not those other emergencies that's life-threatening. It's something that would be athletic-threatening to the horse or comfort-threatening to an older horse.
Okay. So you mentioned using ultrasound or MRI for diagnosis. Once it's diagnosed, how do you choose your course of treatment?
There is different courses of treatment for different injuries, and that's the easy recipe for tissue injuries. Like anything that you see that that's happened to your animal, if you think it was just maybe a kick out in the field and a bruise, you're only going to ice a bruise on your own body, and you're going to try to get swelling down and take care of the pain, maybe with some aspirin, Advil, Tylenol for yourself. You want to do the same thing for your horse. You want to take care of the pain. You want to take care of the swelling. So if you, and I, your initial thing before your vet comes out and takes a look at this horse, and that helps reduce how much fluid gathers in the area for the trauma. And the reasoning for that is the body's trying to respond to a damage, a tear, a break, whatever, within the ligament structure and tendon structure or muscle structure, that it floods it with a bunch of proteins and a bunch of fluid from the blood that sometimes it overdoes it, and that overdoing can cause more damage. So reducing the amount of swelling and reducing the heat helps the pain, but it also helps the structures heal better. So anything that you would do to your own body, I would do the horse. Things you wouldn't do to your own body, I wouldn't do the horse. You do have to remember, though, if you take the pain away, the horse is going to try to run around on this soft tissue structure and may damage it more. So it has to be something where you take the pain away, you take the swelling down, but you confine them until you get more instruction from your veterinarian. And that's what I do initially. After that, the veterinarian can judge what they need to do.
Yeah, you know, horses really aren't great about listening when you tell them that they need to rest.
That's what makes them exact opposite of husbands. We don't mind the resting part. We'd rather not get better, so we can still sit on the couch and watch the Olympics. Just saying.
And get taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dr. Jones, are there any newer treatments that people are using other than rest and icing and NSAIDs to help in recovery of soft tissue injuries?
There are so many options out there. That's why I didn't want to say there's an absolute recipe for them. And it depends on the injury. And, of course, it depends on the expertise of your veterinarian. You might make max limit of your veterinarian and need to go see a specialist or somebody who's a little bit more up on their sports medicine to find out more options. But you can go from a simply, like I said, the bute, the icing, hand walking, to as extravagant as shockwave therapy for inflammation, stem cell injections for reorganizing and renewing and regrowing tendon and ligament structures, as well as plasma injection or protein-rich plasma injections, and IRAP, which is their anti-inflammatories within their own blood, injecting that back in and trying to decrease inflammation. There's a whole gamut of modalities out there to utilize anymore to get a better end result and a lot of times faster end result. So your horse is not out of competition for as long as it used to be back in the old days where it was 8 to 10 months on average.
Mm-hmm. And you know, my understanding is with all these new cool things as far as treatments go, a good rehab program is still ultimately important. So how do you prescribe a rehab program to your patients? How do you decide what's best for that horse?
Well, I've got the blessing of having a physical therapist on staff as my vet assistant. So that's a luxury that most veterinarians don't have. So she will incorporate therapy appointments 2 to 3 times a week on the horses with soft tissue injuries. And what that includes is she evaluates the injury like a physical therapist would for a human and then gives exercise instructions for them to do, and she also will do an e-stim or a therapeutic ultrasound on the horses. We have ships off to rehab facilities for swimming rehab because the weight bearing tends to be a little too much. It's good. The weight bearing is good for rehabbing a tendon or ligament injury, but they need to stay cardiovascularly fit because they're upper level 3-day eventer or an upper level endurance rider that needs to keep the cardiovascular system fit. So the swimming in pools to help the cardiovascular, it doesn't necessarily help the tendon ligament injuries because they do need the exertional forces to work and the contracting and lengthening of the ligaments and tendons to work in order to rehab that area. So occasionally we have put them up there for cardiovascular rehab because of the extra tools they have at those rehab centers. But generally she's out doing passive flexions, stretches, asking the client to do that in between her sessions. She goes out and does therapeutic ultrasound, decreasing inflammation, and the e-stim to get them to start firing the tendons and ligaments and muscles all in the same direction.
So on our athletic horses, how long do you think they'll be out for a soft tissue injury? Is this a couple weeks, couple months, a year?
Again, there's no recipe for this because it depends on what the
injury is. Oh, where's your crystal ball?
I know. If it's a core lesion, it's probably going to be a little bit longer. If you add stem cells to it, you may shorten it up a little bit. You add physical therapy to it, you definitely shorten it up a little bit. Think about this, too. You'll reduce your hand walking if you add physical therapy. Our therapist coming out to see your horse on a regular basis, you can reduce how much hand walking that you'll have to do for the horse because the physical therapist will take one of those hand walking times out of the loop that day that they come visit because they're doing a lot of work on the tendon or ligament injury or even the muscle injury that the hand walking would be replaced by the work that they did. So you don't have to do that hand walking in the hot sun or in the cold winter time as much if you're involving your physical therapist or physiotherapist with your horse's rehab program.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes body armor to survive those hand walking.
Yeah, you've got this helium balloon on the end of your lead rope that wants to fly off to the moon while you're trying to keep them calm. Yes, exactly.
Bounce around. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. And like I mentioned, we have that Ask the Vet Live archive. You can find it on the homepage now of thehorse.com. Really some great suggestions from Dr. Bentz and Dr. Jackman talking about keeping your horses sane and happy and healthy while they're in that rehab period. So thank you, Dr. Jones. I appreciate it. And
my pleasure. And the modalities I spoke about are on my website under services. There's a short explanation of what they are, and then from there you can probably Google more on them, but at least gives you a synopsis of what each one of those modalities I talked about, stem cell, IRAP, shockwave, all that's on my site for you to kind of get a glimpse of what that involves.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And, you know, I keep telling you guys, us horse husbands have it figured out. We know how to keep the horses happy when they're in the stalls. We just feed them more. It's just simple,
oh,
easy,
my
you know.
And then they blow up.
And then they get super, super fat with their legs.
Yeah, and they're happy. Yes, so happy.
So, yeah. Well, Glenn, I have to tell you, I'm in Lexington right now. I left my husband home with a hurt horse, and he's called me, how do I not get kicked when I take care of this for you? And then this morning's text was, is your horse supposed to have shoes on? Yes, my horse is supposed to have shoes on, so.
Are you thinking tennis shoes or horse shoes?
Michelle, just give me a number. I'll give you call and help him. I can give him all the hints in the world from the number one horse husband in the country. Guaranteed this horse will be so fat by the time you get home it won't want to do anything.
I'm a little worried.
See you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thanks, Dr. Glenn. Have a great day.
Bye.
Nobody believes me. Nobody likes my method of doing things. What is it with you guys, you horse women? You just don't believe your horse husbands. You need to put some faith in us. We know what we're doing. Unnatural horsemanship is what we profess.
I love the text. Should the horse have horse? And the other one is, how many horses do we have?
Yes. That's a good one.
Do we have 4 or 5 ponies? Text,
and there are
you do not want to leave on vacation.
There are times you go out and you do a head count in the morning when your wife isn't home, and you have an extra one, and you wonder where that one came from, because you weren't aware of that one. So, anyway, there are a couple stories here I wanted to get to before we went away today. You had a rescue story that you promised everybody. We found a rescue story that we hadn't talked about before.
It's hard to believe. Horse rescued from under bridge in Cherokee County, Georgia. Da-da-da-da. Now, this
Love
is
that
Cherokee,
Cherokee
County, Georgia, which is a rural part of Hancock Mountain Trail in the Salacoa community, which is a pretty rural place. And somehow or another, they don't know how a, quote, large horse got stuck, quote, under a bridge. So the fire department was called, and they extricated the horse from the under the bridge. And when they said large horse, it was a freaking Percheron.
Okay. That's a large horse.
They're not usually prone to stuffing themselves under bridges. No. They don't know how he got there. But they pulled him out with the help of a farm implement. And I took note on this story, and we'll stuff the picture up on our Facebook page. There is a trend. Whenever we have horse rescue stories, there's frequently a tractor involved. And give me a guess, what brand of tractor is most favored by horse rescue crews?
John Deere's.
Wrong. It's the orange Kubota.
Takes better
it's
pictures.
It's the most common tractor I see in horse rescue stories.
Takes better pictures. You get better pictures of your Kubota than you can your John Deere green.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Was the horse
to the...
okay?
The horse was just fine. Now, rural county in Georgia, this is not the outer limits of Los Angeles. The horse, they dragged him out, and he stood up and, quote, leaned against a tree for a while. And then he seemed to feel better, and he was led off to a local pasture.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's good. They always seem to lean against a tree for a while in these stories, too. And then they're all fine again. The National Museum of Racing is going to induct its 2012 Hall of Fame class on Friday at 10:30 a.m. at Fasic Tipton in Sarasota Springs, New York. And those qualifying this year are jockeys John Velasquez, Anthony Hamilton, trainers Roger Atfield and Robert Wheeler, and racehorses Ghost, Zapper, and Planet will be enshrined this year. Tom Durkin, of course, of the track announcer, will be doing all of the master of ceremony stuff. But let me tell you a little bit about a couple of these. And it seems like, I don't know if this is a thing they do every year. Somebody that knows more about racing inductees into the Hall of Fame could tell us. But it seems like they induct a modern person and then somebody from like the 1800s. And every one of these seems to be that way.
Yeah,
let's talk to you. Yeah, let's talk to you about the jockeys and then the horses. We have John Velasquez. He has won 4,841 races and earned more than, you ready for this, drum roll, $268 million in winnings. He won the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Jockey in 2004 and 2005. He led all North American riders in earnings during those years. He led all New York jockeys in wins from 2001 through 2004. And he had a record with 65 wins in Saratoga in 2004. And his credits just go on and on and on. Of course, he might recognize him recently. He won the Kentucky Derby in 2011 with Animal Kingdom and the Belmont Stakes in 2007 with Rags to Riches and 2012 with Union Rags. So, he continues to go strong. And he's won a ton of other things. So congratulations to John Velasquez for his induction into the Racing Hall of Fame. And next was Anthony Hamilton, and this was from 1895. He won two of the most prominent, you heard me right, 1895, won most two of the most prominent races of the time, the Brooklyn Handicap and the Hornpipe, and the Suburban Handicap at Lazzarone. And the next year, he added a third major title, the Metropolitan Handicap, and that was like the Triple Crown of the day. It was even bigger than the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont is today. Those particular races in New York were very popular races. And get this, he's the only African-American jockey to win all three of those races. So that's right. We have an African-American jockey from 1895, by the way, by the name of Anthony Hamilton, being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So there were a lot of African-American jockeys back then. Now, now, a horse, have you ever heard of Ghost Zapper, Jennifer?
Yes.
Okay, he's the son of Awesome Again out of Relaunch Mare, Baby Zip. Won 9 of 11 career starts and earned $3,400,000. He was named Horse of the Year and Champion Older Male in 2004 when he posted a 4-for-4 record. Trained by Hall of Fame member Bobby Frankel, Ghost Zapper won the 2004 Breeders' Cup Classic in stakes record time, covering the 1.25-mile distance in 1:59.02. That year, he also won the Woodward Stakes. He won several of the handicaps that were that year. It just was a terrific horse for Bobby Frankel and is being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He stands at Stallion now at Edina Springs, right?
Yes, I'm very familiar with Ghost Zapper. He gets lots of advertising in the trade papers. I think it's an interesting reflection of modern horse racing that he's the champion older male, having raced four times. Now, admittedly, he won all the biggest, fanciest, most expensive races, but I think they should have an inductee each year. They have one from modern times, one very old one, you know, the older horses or somebody who rode back in the 1800s. They need to have one war horse inducted each year.
Oh,
one horse who is still currently racing that has had more than 50 starts or something.
We had that story about that horse recently that started, what, 100 and some races and never won or came first, second, or third, never placed.
Hippy Chippy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. That's the name of that horse. One other horse inducted into the Hall of Fame right now was foaled in Virginia, and get this, at Major Thomas Doswell's Bullfield Stable in 1855. This is pre-Civil War, and his name was Planet. By revenue out of a Boston mare named Nina. Planet was a sensation from the start. He made his debut with a victory over four others in the mile heats for a purse of $10,000, which in that day was like $1 zillion today. And he went on to establish a record for career purse earnings that stood for 20 years back then. He displayed remarkable skill and versatility by compiling a record of 27-4 from 31 starts, earning $69,000. And as I said, that's in today's dollars, that's a lot. He was known as the Great Red Fox, and he was regarded by many turf experts to be second only to the mighty Lexington among the greatest American racehorses prior to the Civil War. And, of course, the mighty Lexington was what the city of Lexington was named after, correct?
And hello, Planet, the whole freaking planet's named after him.
That came after the horse, you're saying?
Absolutely. Planet. Sign off, Glenn.
That, we'll say goodbye. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Don't forget, you can listen to all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. You can hear us online at horsesinthemorning.com or on your phone at horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I. So you just use your browser and go search for horsesinthemorning.mobi. You can listen to us on your smartphone there. And we are going to be back here live on Friday morning. Get your really bad ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We'll let you know what the prize is tomorrow. But you have 2 days to hit Craigslist and get your really bad ads in. And Jamie will be back on Friday morning. Thank you, everybody. Say goodbye, Jennifer.
Goodbye, Jennifer.
Hey, stay neuter and yelled and wear your helmets, everybody. Jumping's going on right now. Check it out.